Welcome to Tribal Theocrat Live. I'm your host, Christian Gray. Thanks for tuning in. This is our first live show. Previously, we did a podcast called the Tribal Theocrat Podcast, and those are archived at tribaltheocrat.com. I think we did 18 or 19 of those, and most of them, the first 14 or 15 or so, focused on the previous week's news related to the white race and the Christian faith, and we gave some commentary on current news stories. And then we did two or three topical podcasts, two on a pastor named Kevin Swanson who advocates racial genocide. And then we had the author of Rise of the Black Serial Killer, Justin Cottrell, on one of our podcasts, and he's going to be on in the second segment tonight talking about one of his new projects, ethniccrimereport.com. So that will happen in about 20 to 25 minutes. We'll have him on, and let's talk a little bit about the format of the show. For those that are listening via the Future Podcast, you can stream our show from tribaltheocrat.com. Just click the link in the banner or click on Tribal Theocrat Live from the menu, and you'll see the player if we're on the air. If you might need to refresh it if it doesn't pop up, because if we are on the air, that player will be streaming. And there's also an alternate external link if the player is not working. You'll see that they're linked on our page. It's hosted by caster.fm, which is a free internet radio server. And there are ads on that site that I can't control, but for the most part, it's themed to be recognizable as a Tribal Theocrat landing page. I would ask that you would not use that chat module at the caster.fm site because it will add lag and delay to the broadcast. And instead, you can go back over to tribaltheocrat.com, which I hope you are right now, and use the chat function at the bottom of your browser. You will see a tab that says Tribal Theocrat Live. Just click that tab and you can start typing as a guest. I believe after 7 messages, you will be prompted to log in with either your Facebook or Twitter credentials, or you can just give yourself an arbitrary guest name. And I won't be heavily monitoring that chat, but be respectful. I'll probably boot you if you insult Christ or blaspheme God, but I probably won't be monitoring it. The chat currently supports 25 users, so you'll want to get there quickly. If it fills up too quickly, I'll know that I need to look for a different module that could support more users, but until then, it should work just fine. We're just trying to do this low cost as possible, in fact, free. The format of the show is the following. It will run for an hour starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the first Saturday of every month. We'll try to have a guest on each show, in which case the second and longest segment of the show will be that interview. That segment runs about 40 minutes, while the first 20 minutes will be some commentary by yours truly on noteworthy issues for Christians and whites, followed by a brief musical interlude. All shows will be recorded and later published as an on-demand podcast at tribaltheocrat.com. The topic of the first segment today is the state of the church, and we will do that presently. It's a topic I think about a lot because the church is in such a miserable state. And I thought I would list some major concerns that I see, and I would love to get your feedback. To start, we should acknowledge that the church is responsible for not only preaching the gospel and administrating the sacraments, but also for engaging and redeeming culture and politics. The church is the salt and light of the earth. It's the salt of the earth and light of the world, the pillar and ground of truth. Yet today, it's completely comprised, or it's completely compromised. It's no longer the salt of the earth or the light of the world or the pillar and ground of truth. It's instead opted to focus on piety, which is okay if you don't do it at the expense of engaging the culture. It's what we call pietism. So being pious and personal piety is commanded, and that's a good thing. But pietism is when you inordinately focus on the experiential and devotional aspects of Christianity at the expense of engaging the culture and reforming politics. And that's the big problem today with the church. It's focused on Bible studies and mission conferences and internal theological debates. And I'm speaking mainly for Protestants and evangelicals here, but my guess is the same applies for other groups as well. And I'll list four or five or six big issues that I think completely compromises the church, and I can understand why a lot of non-Christians, especially some white advocates who are aware of what's going on, aren't big fans of the church. And I can also understand why some Christians are not fans with the institutional church as well. If you look at the issue of public school, this is the first one I have listed here, I think over 90% of Christians send their covenant children to state institutions to be molded K through 12, 6-7 hours a day. That right there is really outlandish. And when you look at the origin of public schools, what their purpose is, what goes on there in terms of the teaching methodology, the social issues, it's completely bizarre that that 97, or I forget the actual percentage, but over 90% of the church would be doing that. And there is a good article, which I'll probably link on this podcast post. I think I read that from WorldNet Daily, that talks about these issues. And I think the article is it okay to send your Christian kids to government school? And there are some good statistics there you can learn about what happens when you do that. So that's a complete gaffe right there, that 90% of covenant kids go to these indoctrination centers by the state, which the main goal of is to pull them apart from the influence of the parent and to shape them according to their teachers and to their own peers. The other issue I have listed here is the issue of working mothers. That too is a big issue. Titus 2 says that the responsibility and primary role of the mother is to be a home manager and a rearer of children, a homemaker, and to raise the children and not be a surrogate mother to the state. That's a big issue as well. And you won't hear any pastors, any mainline pastors, you probably hear a few of them, and there are some faithful pastors out there, but in large, I'm speaking in generalities, which Christian ministry or which pastor is going to tell you to pull your kids out of public school and for the mother to get back out of the workforce and quit wearing man suits and to teach their kids? It just won't happen. Military worship. Our military is one of the most ungodly forces out there. We invade other lands, sovereign lands who did nothing to us, and we murder their citizens for oil and for the help of our and for to assist our regional allies, mainly Israel. And we haven't been in a just war since, in my view, the American Civil War, the war between the states. And in that war, it was only just for the South, not for the North. Remember, the North invaded the South, murdered them for the reason that the South wanted to be left alone. They wanted to secede from the Union. We do the same thing today. The Union Army is alive and well, and that's all we've been doing since then. Every war since World War II has not even been declared by Congress, so it's an unjust war in that sense as well. But Christians are absolutely in love with the military. I can't tell you how many yellow ribbons I see on the back of bumpers in the church parking lot. And to speak against the military or local law enforcement will get you in trouble. I have a post on tribaltheocrat.com entitled Why I Hate Cops and You Should Too, and it talks about how cops no longer are principled people who are servants, who are public servants, who are peace officers. They're now order takers, and their job is to knock on your door and to enforce whatever the public policy is at the time, not the Constitution. So there's been a dramatic shift, but as long as these people wear a badge and a blue uniform, Christians all but worship them. The same with the military. It's ungodly, it's wicked, and it's got to stop if we're going to have any influence in the world. Public schools, working mothers, military worship, and I mentioned Israel. This is a this may be the number one problem, Israel and Jew worship. Absolutely incredible. Most Christians don't even have any clue the difference between physical Israelites and these imposters today who claim that they're Jews. And they are complete parasites who have really betrayed the church. But we got bumper stickers like, my boss is a Jewish carpenter. And you can't criticize Israel. You can't criticize Jews, especially the dispensational Christians. They'll tell you that to curse a Jew is you'll be cursed by God. So you have to bless every Jew. The Jew worship is probably one of the biggest reasons I think our non-Christian white advocate brothers don't like the church. And that's, I can sympathize with that. There's hardly a Christian that doesn't engage in Jew worship. And how about the fact that if you get really involved in Christian apologetic ministries, which I have in the past, where you are defending the faith against charges, and you can you usually learn about other faiths too, and cults. So you learn about Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses and why they're wrong. You learn about everybody but the Talmud. You do not study the Talmud. The basic criticism is, well, Jews are, they don't believe in Christ. And they have a works righteousness religion. But we don't ever discuss the Talmud. We can open the Quran. We can open the Pearl of Great Price and all these other non-Christian authoritative texts. But no one has any clue at all about what the Talmud teaches about Jesus Christ, what it teaches about Gentiles. It teaches Jewish superiority over Gentiles, that Gentiles can be treated as cattle. It teaches that Jesus Christ is boiling in hot excrement. But who knows about that? Nobody knows about that. You won't find any discussion of the Talmud in your church library. Complete Israel worship, Jew worship. Another issue is the obsession with TV. Again, run by Jews. You get to choose one of many programs to watch tonight, but every one of them has to go through a Jew filter, and there's complete propaganda in there. There might be some channels you can watch, like Animal Planet or whatever, but look at the commercials. Complete bombardment with slutty women, making whites look like inferior idiots, black worship. TV obsession is just out of control. And you are very much influenced by not only your friends, but your electronic friends as well, your electronic peers. That might be one of the reasons why the next one is a problem, and that's immodesty. There's an old saying that yesterday's liberalism is today's conservatism. Well, look at the way Christian women dress today. Yesterday's prostitute attire is today's Christian ladies' attire. It's absolutely mind-boggling. But I guess they're trying to be like their electronic peers on television and look like the latest, whoever is the latest fashionable lady out there. Republican worship. Most Christians are Republicans. Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, National Review, blah, blah, blah. One of my elders has a picture of Abraham Lincoln in his downstairs bathroom. You can guess what I wanted to do with it. Just to tell how bad the church thinks politically today, I'm going to hold off on the music and finish this last line before we do the music and bring on Justin. But the only qualified candidate today in this race of 2012 is Ron Paul, and he's the one guy that Christians are not going to vote for. He's the only guy who's not a welfare, warfare statist. And Christians are worried they're so worried that Ron Paul might bring our troops home from murdering people and thus leaving the satanic state of Israel vulnerable. The church will never be a voice to the lost, a light to the world, or salt to the earth if it continues these evils. Thanks for that. Thanks for listening to that rant. Here's the music, and then we'll bring on Justin Cottrell at the end of the song. Well, we're back here at Tribal Theocrat Live. This is our second segment, and we have a guest on the line right now. He was interviewed by yours truly a few weeks ago on Tribal Theocrat podcast. I think it's in episode 17 or 18. You can search for it at the site. And he then talked about his book, which is currently being published, entitled Rise of the Black Serial Killer. And today he's back on the show to talk about a new project. Justin, thanks for coming on the show again. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
Great. Terrific. Well, your new project is called ethniccrimereport.com. Can you talk about
yes.
that a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just want you to talk about that project, what it's about, and why you're doing it.
Well, besides just everybody thinks I'm about black serial killers, and I'm really not, there's other things I like to discuss, too, and one of them is the disparity between what really happens in the world and what's reported in the media. And what we find is anytime that a white guy kills a black guy, it makes mainstream news, and usually they go on for days, if not weeks or months. And it does happen. But whenever the opposite happens, a black guy kills a white guy, which happens quite a bit more often, or a white woman, you never hear a word about it.
Sure.
And you never see anything about it in the media either. And so this website doesn't just focus on one race. It shows all the races so people can look and make an educated decision. They can say, wow, there is evidence of white guys killing black people. And there's evidence of Hispanic people killing black people and Asian and vice versa. All the races crossed. But from just the preliminary work we've done, we've only got about a week and a half into the website, just little hours here, or a few minutes here and there. But so far, black on white crime is the most dominant part that we have. And it's not because I've just chosen that avenue, but that's the majority of what I find whenever I research it.
Right. So your studies, what do you think about the people that say, just because your studies show that not all races commit crime at equal levels as pertaining to their population representation, so what? Maybe it's a fluke.
It's not a fluke. The same type of people that say that are the same people that will tell you race doesn't exist. And race doesn't exist in their mind until you show a crime statistic that says, well, black people kill quite a few more white people on average than white people kill black people. And they say, oh, whoa, whoa, you can't say that. That's racist. And so that's another reason I'm doing this too. And like I said, it's not a fluke. When you look at, for instance, I was looking at uniform crime statistics yesterday from the FBI, and the number of blacks that are murdered versus the number of whites that are murdered every year in this country is almost equal. It's within a few hundred of each other.
Right.
But the number of blacks that kill any race is quite a bit higher. And remember, blacks only make up about 13% of our nation's population.
Right. That's the big difference that people don't often get, isn't it?
It is, and that's what I'm saying. Blacks, on average, they kill more than any other race, and they, you know, no matter what race they kill, but they represent a minority. And so whenever you point that out, that's when you can usually back the race deniers and, you know, the liberals into a corner, and they have nothing to say. They have no answers. And, of course, they'll usually say, oh, you're a racist, or it's a fluke. Well, it's not a fluke.
Absolutely not. You did a recent post on TribalTheocrat.com, which is a big hit. I've had a lot of compliments on that post. It's entitled An Unholy Alliance, Jewish Influence on Creationists. And I just wondered if there's any connection between your project and that article. And, the, you know, the main message of that article, is there a relationship?
There is. No, we haven't explored that, you know, in full yet, but there is. I firmly believe, as well as I think you do as well, that there is kind of a conspiracy with amongst Jews to subvert white people and to suppress the truth. You know, the truth in this instance, does black-on-white crime happen? Absolutely. But you don't hear it in the Jewish-owned media. You never see it. And so, yeah, there is a connection.
Well,
I hope
that
answers your question.
Yeah, I think you're an anti-Semite for saying that.
Yeah, first define what Semite is.
Well, if race is as important as your studies suggest, do you think there's any chance of an impending race war? Are media moguls and political pundits orchestrating a second chapter in the war between the states?
You know, honestly, I really think there is. And with what happened down in Florida with the whole Trayvon thing and George right. Zimmerman back in March, we've seen, I've got an article I've written, I need to finish it up, I've been so busy to submit it, but I believe there's been 15 or 16 documented cases of whites attacked by blacks since that crime, and in every instance they say, this is for Trayvon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just that, there have been flash mobs that have robbed, after a Hoodies for Trayvon march, there were two different flash mobs that robbed stores for Trayvon.
Yeah.
And recently, and this hasn't made the news yet, this happened about a week and a half ago. I live up in North Idaho, and right across the border from us, about 20 miles from me, is Spokane, Washington, a pretty good sized city. And there was a 55-year-old lady that was walking her dog at 8 in the morning one morning along the Spokane River, and she was attacked by a black guy. Her dying words were, a black guy did this with a googly eye wearing a black hoodie, and he said something. We don't know what that is. They haven't published what she said, but he stabbed her to death, and then he ran. And I don't know what he said, but at the same time, the blacks in Spokane, whenever you go, you know, they delete the comments pretty quick. You've got to be pretty spry to see him. But when they first posted the story, some blacks got in there and said, yeah, this be for Trayvon. This is for Trayvon. And if that's true, this is the first example of somebody dying because of Trayvon, because no one's died yet. No whites have died. They've been beaten and bruised and banged up, but nobody's died. And is this an example of that? You know, we have all of this happening, and the media suppresses it. You right. hear nothing about it. So to answer your question, I believe there is an impending one. Whether it happens next month or next year, you know, it's anybody's best guess. But it is building up to something like that.
I tend to agree. I really do. I see it happening. The Trayvon thing is an excellent case. It's interesting that these blacks who are going out and beating up and killing whites, and they're doing it for Trayvon, this would have never, ever happened if the mainline national media didn't do what they did. This black, the kind of story that we saw between Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, unfortunately, was a common occurrence. Black on white, white on black, interracial crime, it happens every day. What makes this one so special, I don't know. But the media thought it was special. And they launched a campaign, and it's dying down a little bit now, but we're still paying the consequences in terms of being beat up and being killed and having blacks instigated against us now. This is the media's fault, in my view.
I agree with you, and I don't know if you saw, my internet was out, all of North Idaho was out most of the day, but early this morning I saw it, or maybe it was last night I saw it. I'm trying to look for the name of the organization right now, but Trayvon's mother, I don't know if you saw that, she got on, was a spokesman against violence and handguns. And
I did not watch the video, but I know what you're talking about. Maybe I should watch it later.
I watched the video, and you've got to remember, I look at crime reports, I read statistics, I read data every time I can, and I've looked at every homicide crime report from the FBI from present to when they first started it. And the statistics that she quotes, she says in there, she says, this year there will be 30,000 mothers lose their children in America because of guns. Well, that's a lie. Last year there were 12,000 people that were killed in this country, a little over 12,000. And there was about maybe 20,000 suicides. But they weren't all to guns. Some of them were pills, knives, and the same with the homicide. Some of them got beat to death. Where is she getting this from? And if you look, it says from the Center of Disease Control. That's kind of a red flag. The Center of Disease Control controls diseases information, you know, information about plagues and such. But they had an article last year where they were quoting during a two-year span from 2006 to 2007, there were around 30,000 gun fatalities, whether it be homicide, suicide, or whatever, by their estimation. Well, this liberal organization has put Trayvon's mama up there. She's talking against guns and the Stand Your Ground law in Florida, and saying that this is now happening. And it's not. It's another example where they've skewed the data. And most people are going to watch and say, oh my, 30,000 people died this year. That's a lot. But that's a lie. There are not going to be, well, barring a pending race war, there's not going to be that many. Because every year for the last 5 years, we've been clocking about the same murder rate in this country. So, again, it's just more liberal media crud coming out of this Trayvon case.
It is. It really is. I know I've listened to a few things by Alex Linder, and he coined the term or the phrase hush crimes. And there he's talking about the crimes committed by the mainline media of not telling us about what's going on, not sounding the bell. And I think he's right. These are big, culpable hush crimes. And I would hate to be, I'd hate to have to answer to God one day as a journalist or someone who even runs these mainline media outlets, because it's complete wickedness from top to bottom. And that leads to another question I had for you. And that is, in general, how can your studies you're doing and the racial crime report and your book and your new site, how can this practically help the average American?
Well, I believe it can give them, first of all, it can get them a bit of truth. You look at it and you say, wow. Because a lot of people, and I'll kind of sidetrack for a second to answer that. A lot of the people that you see in the media and that they interview, and a lot of these white pastors you mentioned, like Kevin Swanson and stuff, they live in white neighborhoods.
Yep.
They go to an all-white church. They're not around a lot of other races. And so they say these things, you know, and call us racist and bigots and anti-Semites and so forth. But they live, like I said, in an all-white neighborhood. But how this helps is it gives them evidence. They can look at it. Like in my book, they can look at the stories. They can look at the statistics. And then say, wow, this stuff really happens. And for instance, I'll give an example. When you look up lynching, you just Google lynching in America. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that the last case was, I believe, in 1980 or 81 documented. I believe the guy's name was James McDonald. It was down in Mobile, Alabama. Jesse Jackson March. It was a kid walking home. Some two white guys decided they were members of a local KKK. They were going to lynch a black guy. And so they went and lynched him. Shouldn't have done it. It was a horrible crime. But if you look and, you know, like I said, Google that, you'll find that. But at the same time, in my book, I document and I tell that full story in my book with James McDonald, but I compare it to one that happened in 2006 in Riverside County, California, and you can find nothing on this story. When I mean nothing, they have taken every news report off the internet. And if it wasn't for family members of these two women that died, you would never know about it. They've taken, thankfully, all the news reports and posted them in internet forums about black-on-white crime, and you can read them there. But there's a guy, his name's Javier Victorani. He was from Cuba. His parents came up here, but he was fully black. He murdered one white gal, raped her. She was slightly retarded. She didn't know what was going on. And then he burned her body in a car. That wasn't technically a lynching. The next two were. He took one, he took a white gal, kidnapped her, put her in a hotel room, raped her, beat her with a lamp, and then he hung her in the closet, execution style. And then he did it with a 16-year-old white girl walking home from a friend's house. He presented himself as a talent agent. He said, "You're a beautiful young lady. I think you can be a star model someday. Why don't you come to my office and I'll show you?" He hung her in a park from her clothes, execution style. She was discovered the next day by her family. And so that's a classic example of lynching, but you don't find it. And that's not the only one. There's others like that. There was a case in Fort Smith, Arkansas, about 5 years ago, same story. White clerk, black guy came in to rob the store, but he wanted more than just money. He raped her, and then he hung her and left a note that he had lynched a white, B-I-T-C-H, I won't say it, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
but you don't hear that sort of stuff. And so that's what I do, is I dig up facts. It's not that I'm trying to incriminate anybody, because I know black people. I've got a few that I talk to here where I live, and they're decent folks. But at the same time, if everybody thinks that the few nice black people they know, that represents all black people, and it doesn't, because there are some horrible black criminals out there doing some horrible crimes and still lynching people to this day. So I hope that answers your question. Kind of a long answer.
No, that does answer it very well. I was on Facebook a few days ago, and a friend of mine posted a link about the murders of Channing Christian and Christopher Newsom that happened back, that was 2007, I believe, in January. And
yes.
her comment was, "Wow, this is incredible." But the point is, hello, this happened 5 years ago. And what you saw in that case, if you want to read the Wikipedia page on that, it's horrific. Even the Wikipedia page doesn't get PC on this. It tells you what happened and these black savages, what they did to this male and the female. It's just horrific. And it is 20 times worse than what Zimmerman did to Trayvon Martin. In fact, Zimmerman he pulled his licensed handgun and defended himself because he was getting his head slammed in the concrete. And now that's all over the news. It's all over the nation. Blacks are getting upset and more upset with whites and starting to hurt and kill whites. And yet this happened 5 years ago, 10, 20 times more horrific. And people are just now finding out about it. And many people will never find out about it. And it's because of the mainline freaking media.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. And, you know, the thing is, with that case out of Knoxville, it was horrible what happened to those two young man and young lady. But at the same time, that happens every month, almost on a weekly basis, and sometimes two and three times a week. And that's one thing I'm trying to do, trying to get a little bit of help on my website to put that stuff on there. And I've got several stories so far. And like I said, I've only got, I think, 100 and some odd stories, but it's very little work I put into it. It's a work in progress because, like I told my wife, I could take a few months off and I could catch up overnight within a matter of an hour or two of all the white on black crime. But if I dare slip even a day or two on black on white crime, I'm catching up. And not only that, but I'm trying to dig up stuff all the way back to 1850. I mean, it's not thousands, it's hundreds of thousands of cases. And some of the stories are just horrific, what you read. And what you mentioned, too, comparing the Trayvon story to that, if you remember back in the year 2000 in Wichita, Kansas, the Carr brothers, they did a crime that was, in my eyes, one of the most horrific that's happened in the last century. Killed a total of five people in a 4 or 5 day span. And never mind how heinous it was what they did, it never gained national media attention. During the same time, Wynonna Ryder, the Hollywood starlet, she had stole a purse, if you remember, for some Santa Monica.
She's a Jew, by the way.
Department store or something. That made national news. The Carr brothers, outside of the Wichita, Oklahoma City area, maybe Kansas City, nobody had heard of it.
Nope.
But you heard about Wynonna stealing the purse.
Yep. The media is an expert at diversion news stories, disinformation, and they're also an expert at propaganda. And whatever they want you to believe and however they want you to react, they pull it off because most people are vegged out in front of the television getting their information from Jews. And that's one of the biggest problems with Christians, with everyone, is that no one knows how to think independently anymore, to use the internet, use critical thinking, look at independent sites, make your own judgments, quit repeating the platitudes that you learn from public school and the media, and do your homework. But people like to be entertained, and they like to be stupid.
They do, and it's funny you mentioned that, in a little sidetrack here. I'm pretty politically involved up here where I live, and I went to what's called a Pachyderm Club meeting yesterday to support a local candidate that I'm that's running up here, that's a Ron Paul type of candidate, just a true patriot guy. And there was a lady that got up and spoke, and she knows who I am, and she said, "I wish that someone in this room, or some of the people in this room, would quit sticking up for Ron Paul. We need to tell him to drop out because we need to get Obama out of the White House. Romney is a godly man."
Oh, please.
And this lady goes to a Presbyterian church, mind you. And I shook my head and said, "What? Romney now a godly man? He's a Mormon. He doesn't fit into the confines of Christianity, in theologically or anything, but not even salvation wise either. But at the same time, she didn't realize he's the same ideologically as Obama. He's got the same puppet masters." And I tried to tell her, but it was like talking to concrete. She was all mixed up and firmly set.
Yeah, I wish I had more time to spend on that Ron Paul Christian issue earlier in the first segment, but it blows me away how many Christians don't like Ron Paul, and they will vote for Mitt Romney, guaranteed. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. If he's a Republican and he's not Ron Paul, then that means he's much better than Obama, and so we have to vote for him. It's disgusting.
It is. It really is. I think if Judas Iscariot was here, they'd vote for him.
They would. They would. I had some image I was going to pull up. I've seen it on Facebook, and it's a table of comparisons between Romney and Ron Paul. Let's see if I can get it real quick. And it talks about things. I probably won't be able to find it now that I'm live on the air, but basic issues like who has a perfect record of not voting for unconstitutional legislation? Well, Ron Paul. Who favors the Patriot Act? Not Ron Paul, Mitt Romney. And it goes on and on and on. And it's outlandish why anybody would vote for him. And I guess the reason is because he's, as I said, a typical warmonger and a warfare statist and a welfare statist, and Ron Paul isn't.
Yeah. Another aside, I'll be brief and we can get back on topic here. But at this same meeting, I listened to a guy that's running for legislator. And we've got, in my district here, we've got a fine state rep right here. I know him personally, a good godly man. He's one of the most conservative guys in this country right now. And they're trying to oust him because he's too conservative. And nonetheless, his opposition got up and spoke and said he's for smaller government. He wants the government out of our business. But then the next breath, he said that we need to start inspecting raw milk. We need to ban raw milk. We need to also just ban this, government here. And it was just comical to hear him say less government, but then he wants more government. And that's a common thing that you see in these red state worshipers, and especially the Romneyites within the church. They just I don't even understand it. I really don't.
Yeah. It's really, really discouraging. I don't know what to say about it. I know there's one person in my church I was talking to about this, and I asked, who are you voting for? And this was right after Rick Santorum pulled out, and that was his candidate. But now that Rick pulled out, he wasn't sure what to do. But I said, well, what about Ron Paul? He's like, well, I just don't like Ron Paul. And I said, well, what don't you like about him? He's a Christian. He's a constitutionalist. And he couldn't tell me what he didn't know about him. He just knew that he didn't like him. I think he mentioned something about he was afraid that the Ron Paul would downsize our troops and make us more vulnerable to terrorism. But that was all he could say as to why he did not like Ron Paul. And he ended up telling me that he's going to vote for Mitt Romney because it's the lesser of two evils, the other one being voting for Barack Obama. But as you pointed out, they are the same candidate, just different parties. You know, both Republican and Democratic parties today are one and the same. They just break different parts of the Constitution, but everyone breaks the Constitution. No one cares about it. No one cares about law and order. It's just the degree of Jew worship is maybe the only difference. But
it is, and that's why I joke around and tell people up here. I'll tell them once in a while, I'll say something snide like, voting between Romney and Obama is like voting between Lenin and Stalin or Hitler and Stalin. I'll even throw that out once in a while just to kind of rate, and people look at me and I swear they'd shoot me on the spot if they could for saying such things, but it's the truth. They're both evil. Neither one of them is good, and they're both controlled by the same people.
Yeah.
And both of them, believe it or not, both of them would turn a blind eye to the subject that we're on about, this ethnic crime. I mean, both of them, they don't care.
No, they don't care. They don't care at all. Romney, by the way, has the worst gun control record of all the candidates, including Obama, I believe, or it could just be the Republicans. But anyhow, he has the worst gun control record of Mitt Romney, of between himself and Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich. Rick Santorum. He also favors using the U.S. military to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens without legal representation or due process of law, which just makes your blood boil that anyone would want to vote somebody who doesn't care whether you are targeted as a homeland terrorist. And Ron Paul is the only one who's spoken out about that sinister piece of legislation moving through right now. But nobody cares. He likes Israel, so hurrah, hurrah, vote Republican.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to mention one thing I forgot to mention. Sorry to go back on you. Somebody made an excellent point the other day, and it's something I've thought about. I'm wanting to put this work together, my ethnic crime report. I'm starting to formulate for a second book that just talks about this subject, and not really serial killers, but just ethnic crime in general. And you know, the overall murder rate has dropped from the 80s and the 90s for a long time. During the 80s and 90s, Detroit, Chicago, Houston, L.A., they were all clocking between 600 and 1,000 murders a year. I mean, it was just unreal what they were clocking. Now, most of those cities are clocking a third to half of that. And people say, well, wow, look at this. Gun control has worked. Well, no, gun control hasn't worked. All the little joke things they do where they turn over guns to the city, they turn in trashy guns, broke guns, crappy guns, just cheap guns. And crime has been cut not because of that. It's because the blacks are locked in prison.
Right.
Prison rates have skyrocketed since 1980. But crime has gone down from 1990 to present. Well, there's a correlation here. And so, but what we see is a revolving door, and that's something I talk about in my last book that just blows me away. We see a guy murder, he's out for a year, sometimes even a day, and he commits another crime, whether it be rape or assault or murder again, and he's back in again, and then out in a few years, back in again. It's mind-boggling, because you don't see that with white criminals much. Yeah, you do see it happen occasionally. There was one up here that, my way, Joseph Duncan, he'd been locked in California prison for murder, came up here and murdered some more people after he got out. It does happen, but it's not the norm. Usually with a murderer that's white, they lock them away until they're too old to kill again, or they rot away in a cell. But with blacks, it's 3 to 7 years and they're out again, even if they've murdered two or three people. And I don't understand why they're out so quick. Occasionally they're in longer than that, but I've seen guys kill three different people and they serve only 4 years, and I can't fathom that. I don't understand why they're not executed or locked way longer.
Well, it's racist to execute blacks, Justin. it's racist to keep them in there very long. You know, one thing that really drives me nuts is when I hear a Christian say, oh, good, I hope they lock him up forever, as if prisons are a biblical idea at all. That prisons end up punishing the innocent through taxation. The biblical model is restitution. You make restitution for your crimes. If it's a capital crime, you get hanged. It's that simple. No prisons. Bogus.
Yeah. No, I agree 100% with you. When I say locked up longer, ultimately I want execution. If you murder, I don't care your race. I don't care your age, your sex, whatever. Kill them immediately, as fast as possible, quick and painless.
Yep.
Well, painful is fine. But at the same time, I would at least like to see a guy serve more than 3 or 4 years too. You know, it's mind-boggling that they do that. And there's worse stories than that. But what's funny, you mentioned you can't. It's racist to say that. It's funny every time you have a black. Last year was Troy Davis out of Atlanta, Georgia, I believe, or it's somewhere in Georgia, wasn't Atlanta. Maybe it was Columbia. He had murdered a white cop in the 80s, and some witnesses, which this happens a lot, the black witness that saw it, they swore up and down it happened, and guess what? They recanted their story as soon as Troy was going to be executed. And so they went through this extensive appeals process, took almost a decade. Well, they finally killed him last year. They finally fulfilled it, and it was a good thing. But every media report, instead of saying Troy Davis, the guilty, the accused, everybody knows he did it, was executed, they called it the legal lynching of Troy Davis. Almost every media story that covered it called that. But if it had been a white guy, you'd never have seen a headline, first of all. You might have seen a blip that said, yeah, so-and-so, a filthy bastard, was hung. But that's about all you'd see.
That's true.
You wouldn't dare call it a legal lynching. And that really gets me worked up when I see that. I feel like strangling it. Well, not strangling, but just beating around a media reporter for saying stuff like that.
I was in my last year in college pursuing an English degree. I had to take a poetry class, and it was black poetry. It was black and Puerto Rican poetry. I think it was called, it's the name of the stuff is Appalachian poetry or something like that. So it was all typical whites oppressed blacks, whites oppressed Puerto Ricans. It's hard to be a minority. And of course the subject of lynching came up, and you wouldn't believe how much disinformation people spew forth about lynchings. They don't even mention the fact that whites in the Reconstruction era were lynching whites as well. It wasn't just a black thing. Blacks were lynched, but it was an alternative to letting rapes go unpunished in your own communities. But of course I couldn't say that because I'd get an F for the class and not graduate and blah blah blah. But that was a miserable semester.
Yeah. I need to remind me. I need to send you that article. I've got it on one of my blogs posted that I wrote about lynching. Post it for the listeners on your website, or a link to it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's something I stumbled onto when I was researching my serial killer book. I kept finding these. It said black lynch mob, and I'm like, what? I had never heard of any black lynch mob.
Right.
But it happened. I found within a period of about an hour and a half, about 30 examples from 1850-ish to about 1930, maybe it was 1938 was the latest, somewhere in there, of blacks that were ticked off because a member of their own black community had murdered or raped some young gal, and they said, screw the police, sheriff, we're going to kill this guy now, and they did it. You never hear about that. Yeah, and that just shows that even within black communities back then, that they didn't want a criminal running around killing their women and raping their women. Mm. They would string them up too. And then not only that, there was examples I found of blacks joining a white lynch mob to lynch black people as well. And the most touching one I ever saw, and I'll be brief on it, but in 1854, there was a guy, he'd killed his master's wife, and his master's wife's sister. He'd raped both the women, dismembered their bodies, and one of the other, he escaped from the farm. The slaves caught him. They saw him bloody. They knew what he'd done. They heard the screams. They caught him and tied him to a tree, went and got the sheriff, went and got the justice of the peace, and they interviewed him, saw the blood, saw the evidence. He admitted to it and said why he did it, and they burned him on the spot. They had a minister come. They prayed with him, and the entire crowd bowed their head. They had a little church service, and then they burned him. And after that was done, the sheriff set every black child down that was there that witnessed it. And you think, oh, how gruesome. Yeah, there were kids there. Set every one of them down and talked to him and said, you see what happens if you don't have God in your life and you don't have moral constraints and don't follow God's law. And that was printed in the New York Times in 1854. That shows how far that paper has fallen. It was a huge, full page spread they did on this story. And you see that it was a wonderful thing. The sheriff was able to teach the importance of biblical law to young blacks. And you know darn well that affected them, because they probably looked at it and said, you know, I don't want to end up like that guy. That was bad what happened to him. We don't want that to happen. And whenever you know, like you mentioned, you hear lynching, you hear these rogue white mobs that are just picking innocent blacks off the street and killing them. That did not happen very often. It happened very, very infrequently. And the same with usually it was just they had committed a serious crime.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, it's okay. We're at the point now where we're off the script, so we have 7 minutes left to talk about whatever. So don't worry about rants or diversions, because that's what this time is for now. Hey, do you want to give a shout out to anybody?
Yeah, I'll give a shout out to some of my friends that are listening. I think Kerry's listening tonight. Give a shout out to him.
The great Kerry Culligan.
Enjoy some of the stuff. Me and him interact on Facebook occasionally, and I enjoy what he has to say. And but I was going to mention one thing. It kind of makes my blood boil, that, you know, a lot of things, whether it's politically or whatever. But whenever it comes to just history and truth, it just drives me nuts. And that was one thing. I was in creation ministry for quite a while, back a decade ago. And I remember when One Blood, the book, came out by Ken Ham and Carl Wieland. I was familiar with Answers in Genesis. I knew a lot of the guys personally. And there was talks within Answers in Genesis, kind of low, hushed tones, they would tell me. I wasn't at that ministry, I was at another, but still, my friends, they would tell me, we don't agree with everything that he's said in here, because we have a lot of questions. How does he have whites coming from blacks and this happening? And kind of some of the stuff I touched on in that article about the Jewish Alliance. They were mentioning some of that, but that got hushed up pretty quick. I guess they had a meeting and said, you know, you talk about this and you're out of here. But that's when I really started looking at things really hard, because I had a scientific background and I liked facts and truth, and I saw what they were doing was just horrible. And I've taken that same approach with crime, with lynching, with serial killers, whatever it is. I just want to know the truth. You know, like I told my wife the other day, I found 843 black serial killers. If I had found two, I'd have been happy too. It's not about the number. It's about the truth.
It is.
I don't care what the number is. I want the truth.
We just got a comment on tribaltheocrat.com from Kevin Allewine, who says, Justin is the man. am I pronouncing your name right? Or Kevin's last name? Do you know Justin? I know that he's a mutual friend.
I believe you are.
Hallowine?
I believe you are. Sounds, A.K.A. Honky.
Sounds Jewish.
He's from southern Mississippi. he's a good old Mississippi boy.
Yeah, we're just teasing you, Kevin.
He's got some great stories, by the way. He's if I remember right, he's in the town or right there close to where the infamous Mississippi burning happened. And I guess he knew people that knew people, or maybe had some sort of not connection that he was guilty of it, but he knew about the crime because it was such a small area. And I've talked with him about that online. Just a fascinating bit of history there to learn the truth behind that. It's not what you saw in the movie Mississippi Burning. And which, surprise, surprise, a Jewish-made movie that doesn't tell the truth.
You've also written for faithandheritage.com, and you had one piece that talked about the comparison between living in a black neighborhood or living in a white atheist neighborhood. And would you mind talking a little bit about that article?
I can. Yeah, that was a fun one to do, actually. I just my main thing, I love researching. I don't claim to be the best writer because I'm not. We've got a mutual friend, the Grammar Fuhrer, we'll call him, that eats my lunch whenever I write stuff.
Yeah, shout out to Neil Desperatum, the Grammar Fuhrer.
Yes, he is,
Neil?
Very much. Zig Heil. But anyways, I enjoyed writing that because a friend of mine, Ehud Wood up here, he mentioned before, he's famous for saying this phrase, "I'd rather live in a white atheist community than a black Christian community." And he gets people so ticked off at him in the church for saying stuff like that. They're like, "Oh, that's not true. A black Christian community is a great thing." I've been to black Christian communities. I was a fireman in one for quite a few years in Oklahoma City. And I saw some pretty bad stuff happen in that black Christian community. So what I did is I just used the nationally accepted data for number of churches, number crime statistics, population, poverty level, income level, you name it. And I pitted towns that were equal size that one was black, one was white. And I made sure I found towns black that were higher percentage, or they claimed to be a higher percentage Christianity than whites. And I started off talking about the town I live in, Hayden, Idaho. It's a great town. We don't even have a cop here, believe it or not. We have the local sheriff patrols a town of 13,000 people.
That's great.
But our murder rate compared to a town in southern Atlanta, Georgia, it's 157 times lower than the crime rate there. Because guess what? It's a white atheist community. We're 98% white here. And most of the people, most of my neighbors, they're all pagan. But they wave at me. They talk to me. They don't steal my kids' bikes when they leave them out occasionally in the front yard. But if I was in that black community, I'd probably have bars in my window, even if I was black, because crime is rampant.
Yep.
And so that's what I do in that article, is pit cities, and I even pit bigger cities like Seattle compared to Detroit. Seattle's not the best town in the world, and Portland's not the best town in the world, but for big cities, they rank usually in the top three for safety for towns over 100,000 in America. Pit them against Detroit. Detroit has a murder rate higher than Washington, Oregon, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, and Wyoming all put together. Get that.
Yeah.
How many states did I just list? I believe it was 8 states compared to one city that takes up 141 square miles. Just makes my head spin to think an area that small, that's a war zone. And you're talking compared to 1/6 of the United States in land area doesn't have as many murders. It makes my head spin. And Detroit, they claimed anywhere, if you talk to black pastors there, anywhere from 30 to 50% Christians, what they claim.
Yeah.
Now, you and I know that's not the truth, but that's what they claim.
We're just about out of time. The music's going to kick in here really soon. I want to thank you for coming on the show, Justin. We need to do it again sometime.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And always like talking to you and like talking about this subject.
Sure. I'll keep you on the line after the end of the show, and we'll chat for a few seconds. Thanks again to all the listeners. I think we had 5 listeners, so we're really doing a number here. But stay tuned next time, which will be the first Saturday of June, and we'll have an interesting program. Trying to get Matt Parrott on the program to talk about the Jewish Masonic Lodge connection. So Matt, if you're listening, now you've got to do it. Thanks, guys. See you next time.